Major sightings here.
All over the place.
Holy
Abnormal.
I see dead people walking around like regular people.
Paranormal. Somewhere between abnormal and paranormal.
I felt like something was near me, kind of a eerie feeling.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Jeremy Scott asks the questions that we're all dying to know.
You can't handle the truth!
Hello? Hello?
You can't keep him down, no matter how hard you try.
Hey, that's the guy!
Traveling into the witching hour from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, you're riding into the paranormal.
You know, when you're in new surroundings, you just got to check over everything once and twice and maybe 8 or 10 times again. But it is a go. Hello, friends. It is an absolute pleasure to be back behind this microphone, the same exact microphone I drug from one end of the United States nearly clearly to the other end of the United States. That same microphone gets me on the air tonight. Knock on wood, we're going to stay on air tonight. I want to say thank you to a very special number of people who have stayed with this show. It really means a lot to me. You're going to hear a lot tonight on this show. Those special people I want to thank are our loyal affiliates, particularly Father Mike Paranick at St. Mary Catholic Church in Hillsboro, Ohio at 106.9 WLRU for putting us back on the air, and also to Brad Bernards at Valentine Radio, 1610 AM, surrounding the Valentine, Texas area. A splendid job they have done of stepping up. And of course, I want to thank you, the loyal listeners, for finding your way back to this program. I know it's going to be a little bit of a learning curve for some of you. We're trying to do it the exact same way we did previously. And of course, for those who don't know who I am, what credentials I may bring to this program, I've hosted upwards of 200 of these shows on the paranormal, on conspiratorial topics, of what I like to call the abnormal. Now, for those who may or may not know, and for those who are going to be following me from my earlier podcast, because they see that we're back on some of the same places, they'll know what the abnormal term means. You may not. Abnormal is my version of paranormal. Paranormal seems too normal to me. So we throw a little bit of a twist on that, and it's parabnormal. So welcome to the program tonight. Lots of paranormal news to react to. It's been a while since I've been back behind this microphone. In fact, about a little over 3.5 weeks. And so there is a lot of catching up to be done. But we'll also have Ken Pfeiffer on the program. That's a carryover. The second Friday of every month, he joins us for his UFO sightings report. And he's a MUFON investigator. Ken Pfeiffer is going to be here again tonight. So we've got lots of pictures that you can check out our website. I mean, the God's honest truth of it, ladies and gentlemen, without getting into too much details right yet, the website is a free website. I'm not giving away anything that I don't want anybody to know. I've spent absolutely $0 getting back on the air because I have $0 to my name. That's the God's honest truth tonight. Everything you're going to hear right from the horse's mouth, and I'm being the horse, is the God's honest truth. And so the website is the best I can do for a free website. The streaming service that I'm using does not allow me to broadcast every night. But it does allow me to talk to you for 2 hours every single Saturday, which is what I've elected to do, spend part of my weekend with you, 7 to 9 Pacific, 8 to 10 in the Mountain Time Zone, 9 to 11 in the Central Time Zone, and, of course, 10 to midnight in the Eastern Time Zone. So 2 hours every single Saturday it is. You know, I wish I could be here more. I wish I could talk to you more often, but the nature of the beast is I've got to bring home the bacon. And so there's no money right now in this, ladies and gentlemen. I'm on the air because I want to be on the air. And I know many of you, like Edward G451 in our chat room, the live chat at intotheparabnormal.wix.com/ITP radio, or you can get there at intotheparabnormal.chatango.com, which is the website, the service that we're using. We used that on the last show as well. Edward says 3 weeks too long, and we've got lots of ground to cover tonight. And MUFON investigator Ken Pfeiffer will be up in just a little while. We'll also tell you what's coming up on the program next week. For those who have followed along my journey, one of the shows that I, you know, had planned in the works was the one we're going to bring you next week. So that's on tap with Keith Linder, Steve Mara, and Don Phillips. The exclusive follow-up on the Washington State Poltergeist House case. Many people, even those you may not would expect to be on this program, are coming up in the future weeks. So the website will eventually get its own domain as I put money in my pocket from my own personal ventures, which was allowed me to do the podcast prior to that other program in the first place. Your support, though, is appreciated. You can go to intotheparabnormal.wix.com/ITP radio. My free website allows me to bring you the program here tonight. Of course, we're on the TuneIn Radio app and many other places. So I want to thank you for tuning in, but I know you didn't tune in necessarily just to hear my stories. And for those who are tuning in on one of our loyal affiliates tonight, you may say, well, what's this guy going on and on about? I was here for the paranormal and for conspiracy. And we're going to give it to you. We're going to serve it up in a big portion tonight. Trust me, you will not come away from this empty-handed. I want to thank Chris McCann as well. He's the image voice. The Big Pipes guy is what I like to refer to him as. And you'll hear him in and out of the program. Chris McCann is an upcoming voice talent, and I'm privileged to be a part of that. And just so you know, yeah, things are good with the other voice guy. Really, they are. I just talked to him today. So if you're thinking there's some sort of conspiracy involved in all this, yeah, no, there's not. I want to get into a couple of news items here because there's a lot that has happened since I last was here on the program. Lots of stuff, in fact. Many of it is the same. Some of it is a bit new in the sense that it's the same old as far as that is concerned. You know, I'm big on new cutting-edge, leading-edge technologies and whatnot. Artificial intelligence, AI, robotic activity is a real threat. Obviously, a couple of weeks ago, and most recently this week in Dallas, what a horrible tragedy there. And previous to that, of course, you had the Orlando shooting, the worst, the deadliest mass shooting in American history. And so while these things crop up, it's hard to argue what is the most severe threat, whether it is terrorist activity, whether it is something that is going to destroy us, like a cataclysmic event, maybe an electromagnetic pulse, right? Real possibilities. So is artificial intelligence, AI, robotic movement. Now, there's so many stories that I could backtrack and I could cite you example after example after example on why I believe that we are gearing up for a artificial or a robotic invasion. Many of them are because they are starting to learn skills that are human-esque, learning how to hunt prey, learning even the simplest things as holding items, walking, everything else that comes with that. Elon Musk, you know, the guy involved with Tesla and SpaceX, he's opened up a gym to train robots. There are robots that are being used in industries and people don't even know it because they look like you and I. These aren't hybrids, although they are in a sense, but they are robots. They have a human-esque presence about them, but they're 100% artificial. Scientists at the Institute of Neuroinformatics at the University of Zurich in Switzerland started learning how intelligent robots hunted prey using a special software to aid the robot to identify its target and then attack. Now, these were not on real animals, you might be asking. This was Predator on, well, it was artificial. But there you have it. Robots hunting down prey. And of course, we have the story of a functioning artificial brain that has been created from circuitry. You know, every robot needs to be programmed. It's got to store that programming somewhere. Why not in an artificial brain? Well, German scientists have created a circuit that mimics the functions of the human brain without the use of computer processors. They used a circuit that features two oscillators, which create periodic electrical impulses. And between those two oscillators is a network of special circuitry made up of special components that can remember the level of voltage that previously flowed through them, allowing them to adapt varying voltage levels generated by the oscillators. In a circuit diagram, the oscillators were able to synchronize themselves similar to the manner in which neurons synchronize in the human brain. Maybe a little bit over your head, it's a bit over my head, as some of these stories are. I don't really know what to make of many of them, but that is certainly okay. I'm just bringing you what I come across, and it doesn't take much skill upstairs to kind of listen to these stories that we report on the program and form your own thoughts in your mind about whether or not this might really be a threat. And I haven't really made a convincing case of it tonight. I just wanted to catch you up on some news items since I've last been off of this microphone. By the way, you know, if you've been holding your breath on whether star KIC 8462852, the number and the name that nobody ever remembers, Tabby Star, maybe is a little bit easier to remember. Just call it the alien megastructure hoax, because it took some of the smartest people in the world to tell us that there has been absolutely zero transmission from Tabby's Star, the alien megastructure. You know, the news that one talk show host went on the air and made a really big deal out of with breaking news? Not so breaking, is it? As this story from Inverse.com says, our cold streak continues as far as finding any sign of alien life. China, though, is in the hunt for alien life. They are using a telescope, the world's largest, in fact, to take the lead in the search for alien life. $180 million is what they spent on this thing. So China thinks that finding aliens will someday be a thing. And there's a flesh-eating bacteria that is causing a scare along the Gulf Coast. Imagine that. You go out wanting to enjoy 4th of July weekend, which has just passed, or any other moment of summer, you know, when the weather is a little bit better. And you're with your family, you maybe pack a picnic, and you open up the umbrella. And all of a sudden, when you get back in the car, your flesh is literally starting to decay. I don't want to make people sick here, but you should know that from Texas to Florida, there's this bug that is waterborne. And it is causing people to lose limbs. It's also it's also killing people, quite frankly. And then, of course, there's the Zika virus, which is something that I think is more important of an issue now than it has ever been. But I can't say that 100% for sure. I want to believe that is the case. But as we've heard before, you know, Zika wasn't a really big deal. And then it turned out to be a little bit more concerning. And now there's the story from The Atlantic which says Zika is the most difficult emergency health response ever, according to a CDC official. So it depends on who you might want to believe there. As far as that is concerned, I'll take it with a grain of salt, because they've said a lot on the Zika virus. And like I said, at first they were really, really not concerned at all. And then they said, yeah, it's actually a little bit more concerning than we first thought. And now they're saying it's the most difficult response to a health emergency ever. The effects of the Zika virus include shrinking brains in newborns. For mothers, they include miscarriages. And then for everyone else, paralysis, and much like that flesh-eating bacteria, can cause death. You know, there was a real concern for yours truly coming back from Texas, which is mosquito-brewing country. Lots of mosquito bites that I brought back. They finally have started to go away. Some of them you can still see there. Many of them all across my body, not to get too much in detail. But it looks like I might have escaped the Zika virus at all costs. Some not as lucky, of course. It's affecting, it is responsible for deaths. Hundreds of people in the United States, dozens of thousands around the world, especially in some countries that are maybe not as clean as the United States. Dr. Roach was talking about funding, which was something that while I was off, the House of Representatives finally stood up and passed a bill to fund it, $1.1 billion. It was about 8 tenths of a billion dollars less than what President Barack Obama wanted for the funding of Zika virus. But nonetheless, they gave it a little bit of money. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have Ken Pfeiffer on the program with UFO sightings. France, Quebec, Argentina, Louisiana, Illinois, Brazil, and New Jersey. All on the map tonight, plus the Jackie Gleason case involving ET contact and some military sightings. That is to come. You're listening to Into the Parabnormal. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Can't keep them down, no matter how hard you try.
Can take such a licking and keep on ticking.
Jeremy Scott is back. You're right. Into the Parabnormal.
Hey, thanks, Chris. I'm Jeremy, and you're riding into the Parabnormal, as he said. If you've tuned in for any length of time to the other show or to the other show, you pretty much know what you're going to get from me on a nightly or now a weekly basis, which is the God's honest truth as far as I am concerned. And, of course, you're always welcome to call in with your input. If you think I'm full of a bunch of beans, 818-473-5370, or you can Skype into Parabnormal. You know, I welcome you at all times. I love that that you let me know that you're listening. The Twitter page is at Parabnormal Show. Of course, Into the Parabnormal on Facebook. My email address is intotheparabnormal at gmail.com. We'll have that listen line coming up in future weeks. If you want to podcast the program, eventually those will be on TuneIn, of course. That's one of the places you can listen to the program live. But on YouTube, we'll have the podcast up there actually really quickly. Spreaker and SoundCloud as well, some of our other podcast partners. Our radio affiliates are WLRU 106.9, Hillsboro, Ohio, and, of course, Valentine Radio 1610 in Valentine, Van Horn, Fort Davis, and Marfa, Texas. So if you got something nice to say, now, those are the ways to get involved in the program. A couple of quick headlines here before I bring in, let's actually bring in Ken Pfeiffer right now, and then we'll work some Parabnormal news into this with Ken Pfeiffer, who's here from MUFON. He's an investigator. He's collected thousands of pictures and news items from around the world. Chief investigator of the New Jersey chapter of the Mutual UFO Network and state director in Rhode Island and Vermont, having investigated more than 700 cases. He runs two of the largest websites of their kind, worldufophotos.org and worldufophotosandnews.org. And the best part about this is he's my friend, and he's right now on Into the Parabnormal. Good evening, Ken.
Hey, Jeremy. Hi. How you doing, pal?
I'm doing great. Great to have you on the program.
It's an honor. I'm glad to be on. I'm excited.
Second week of the month. Ken Pfeiffer's here. Of course, we've got the pictures linked up. You go to my website. I'll be putting them up shortly on the Twitter page at Parabnormal Show. There's a story, Ken, that I have linked up in the story section. It's from a 69-year-old witness. She's named Jill, and she's confessed in an interview, which was posted by a UFO researcher, that she carried out tests on pieces of a flying saucer, which allegedly crashed in the New Mexico desert near Roswell. This was 10 years after 1947. Have you heard that story?
No, I haven't. That sounds like some exciting news. That's great.
Do you think that it holds any water?
Well, I don't see why not. I mean, I'm sure there's tons of UFO evidence out there right now, and that's not being disclosed for whatever reason. And it seems that a lot of these people are starting to come out of the closet and admit that these things are real, and some of them have evidence.
Mm-hmm. The other story that that I had that is kind of down your alley as well, of course, Roswell was also a UFO crash. But there's this other story that says, of course, it always comes with a question mark, which when anything comes with a question mark, I question the story because it sounds like they're writing the headline for publicity, not for truth. Conclusive proof that a UFO crashed to Earth, a leaked memo on debris from an outer space vehicle, is the headline from the Express out of the UK. A top secret document leaked by a UFO activist has been hailed as the world's first conclusive proof of parts of a flying saucer being found on Earth. Ken Pfeiffer?
That's great. I'm glad to hear it. Like I said, I'm glad to hear that people are finally coming out of the closet here and admit that these things exist. And I think there's, like I said, there's tons of evidence out there that can prove that a lot of these items are not from this earth.
Okay. We want folks to go to my website, which is intotheparabnormal.wix.com. Into, I-N-T-O, the, T-H-E, Parabnormal.com, Parabnormal.wix, WIX.com/ITP, as in Into the Parabnormal Radio. And again, the reason for that website is because I'm broke, and so it's a free website, and we'll get our own domain eventually. But that's the website. If you go there, you're going to find Ken Pfeiffer's links and his picture. And you'll also find the nine pictures, the eight pictures that we're going to be referencing tonight. For this first one, it goes back to the year 1981, and it's in France. Ken Pfeiffer, what's the story there?
From what I understand, this was a highly publicized sighting in France, one of the most important sightings that they've had. Now, this was January 8th, 1981. This was Trans-en-Provence, France, excuse my French. This happened. It took place, like I said, January 8th, 1981, in Trans-en-Provence, France. An unidentified object was seen landing in the yard of Nikolai. Despite the drawback to this case due to the single witness that validated the landing, he still gave a full account to police authorities, making him as a trustworthy and reliable individual. This guy named Nikolai had lived at the Trans-en-Provence house for 14 years with his wife. Nikolai's wife worked as a cleaning lady, and Nikolai was just retired from the SCNI company. Since 1973, Nikolai had suffered from a heart condition, which forced him to retire 6 years after 6 years later with a pension. But on January 8th, he was outside in the yard when around 5 p.m. he heard a whistling sound. Later on, he was shocked to see a flying device with a large pine tree nearby the boundary of the property. As the alien craft continued its downward motion, he moved closer for a better view, and he clearly saw the object in the yard. Excuse me. Moments after, the object raised up and took off. As it made its way, the object had kicked up dust. Nikolai appeared like two saucers, which is inverted. Beneath each other. It's staying at the height of around 4 feet with a dull gray color. GEPAN, which is a department of the French Space Agency, is responsible for all the UFO investigations. He also reconstructed the duration and trajectory. According to the witness, he stated perceiving the phenomenon in the sky beyond the trees at the back end of the huge platform. And in this case, Mr. Nikolai observed that the motion was continuous and fast without sudden change in speed. The Trans-en-Provence case had always been included in the discussions. In fact, it was considered as one of the best cases that took place in France. On the case, much investigation was done. Through definite conclusions may arrive, but residents therein were assuming that a UFO landed in January 8, 1981. So this was a very high-profile case in France, and there's a pretty dynamite picture of what this thing was and looked like. It's very strange.
We move on to number two. You can go to the website or look for those at Paranormal Show on Twitter and to the Paranormal on Facebook. We're headed all around the world with Ken Pfeiffer tonight, his monthly UFO sightings report, the second week of the month. Quebec, Canada, 1972, Ken.
This is a very famous photo here. I like to show a lot of these old photos because, you know, it kind of proves that a lot of these craft were not military craft because, you know, we didn't have the technology. We didn't have really drones back in 1972. So it kind of kills all the debunkers out there that says that, you know, this is modern technology, but not in the fall of 1972. It wasn't. But this was Lake Maniwaki, Quebec, Canada. And it was a late summer or fall of 1972. A witness who insisted upon remaining unidentified was walking near Lake Maniwaki in the province of Quebec, Canada, when he came upon a huge cone-shaped object apparently resting upon the ground or else hovering very close to it. It was a very large size. He said 60 to 70 feet tall, and as he came into view, it began to rise. He quickly opened his camera and snapped a picture of the strange aircraft on black and white negative film as it continued to ascend upward toward the clouds above. As you can see, the photograph was made with a 35-millimeter handheld camera in what looks like late mid-afternoon time. The strange object was ice cream cone-shaped and of about the same profile and proportions as the Mesa, Arizona sighting. It was very similar to that sighting, and this one was flying with the point of the cone up and a large end down. It looked metallic and was of a silvery color with 12 seemingly fluorescent or somewhat light-radiating probes positioned around the bottom that also looked metallic, and four more around the top that were of a slightly different color and also seemingly lights was radiating from it. The 12 lower globes around the rim of the widest part were of a sort of reddish-orange hue, and the smaller one around the top just below the point were just a little more pinkish in color. But the rest of the surface of this object was not marred by any seams or lines or rivets or fasteners or anything like that. It was seemingly made of all in one piece, and there was no markings of any kind visible on the craft. And the witness was not disappointed, and nobody who knew him had been able to trace his whereabouts. There's no indication as to whether other photos were made or whether the witness had any contact with the craft. But the original negative was sent to someone in the United States, and then the negative became lost. But now this was another high-profile case there in Canada, and it's a terrific photo. It really is.
Again, why do people report these UFO sightings? Why don't they just tell their friends? Why do they call MUFON?
Well, part of the problem is I think a lot of people don't call MUFON, or a lot of people see these things in the sky, and quite frankly, they don't know who to call. You know, a lot of people figure, well, let me call the police station, and you know, if you were to go on the phone right now and call the police station and tell them you saw something strange in the sky, they'll probably write it off or tell you there's nothing they can do about it. Or, you know, it's a shame that MUFON hasn't been able to contact a lot of these agencies just to let them know if anyone does report any kind of UFOs. You know, here's the number. You call MUFON, you report it, and we will investigate the case. And you know, MUFON's not the only game in town. There's other UFO organizations out there, but MUFON is the largest. But still, if you were to ask 9 out of 10 people what MUFON is, they would they really don't know. I think a lot of people are really not aware of that there's a UFO organization out there called MUFON that really does investigate these UFO sightings.
All volunteer effort, and like yourself, retired, many folks who have been doing this have been doing it for decades.
Exactly, yeah. We don't get paid anything. I haven't received one penny in the last 10 years for what I do, but it's a passion. You know, you have to, first of all, believe. I have 6 sightings myself, and a close encounter at Area 51, which I think I already mentioned to you in one of some of your past shows. But it's incredible that, you know, like I said, a lot of people see these things, and they really don't know what to do with it. So, you know, thank God there's everyone seems to have a camera nowadays on hand. So we have been getting some very spectacular photos of these strange alien craft flying around in our skies.
818-473-5370, if you can get through. Lines are full right now, 818-473-5370, not just because Ken Pfeiffer is on the line, but because we have folks waiting, and we'll get to them after the top of the hour. We're going to pick up this UFO report with sighting number 3. We have 8 of these to get to tonight with Ken Pfeiffer on the debut of Into the Parabnormal. I should have mentioned the Skype as well, Into Parabnormal. You can also just go to our website or our Facebook or our Twitter page and get it from there. Argentina. This actually, this year, actually 5 months ago to the day.
Yeah, this one's very recent. A great photo. It seemed that the person here, the witness, was taking some photos of some cyclist on an overpass. And when they were taking the photos, they were able to see the actual UFO. It's not like they viewed the photo later and saw it on the photo. But no, this was an actual witness who saw this. And this was February 9th of 2016, a few months ago, and this was La Rinconda, Argentina, I guess that's how you pronounce it. The story goes is here a member of a family from a cultural company claims having been able to see an unidentified flying object for fleeting seconds at La Rinconada, not far from Junín de los Andes. They took photographs of the event, which frightened them. The cultural company Al Instante, a web portal, conveyed the statement and made statements made by Veronica. Apparently, she's the one who took these photos. And they said it was an incredible story, and they noted that the family was on its way to Junín and stopped at La Rinconada, and they spent some time on the banks of the Colón Cura River. Veronica says that she took a photo of a group of bikers crossing the bridge when she saw the strange object in the sky. She screamed. Everyone looked, and we saw it some 50 meters away for an instant. Just when I took the photo. After that, it was no longer there. She explained. This sounds like a close encounter, only 50 meters. But their initial reaction was to run and get into the car. And we took off immediately. We shut everything because it was truly frightening. It truly frightened us, said the resident of the cultural company who shared the photo that went viral over the weekend through social media. So this was a pretty spectacular photo of a shiny alien flying saucer, basically is what it looks like.
Some might say he just said alien craft.
Yeah, I say alien craft. You know, it's what they are. People say UFO, and I think it's about time that, you know, unidentified flying object, I think that should be kind of thrown out the window. And you know, let's face it, these things are becoming identified as alien craft. It's kind of like standing on a dock, and you're looking in the clear water, and you see all these USOs, unidentified submerged objects, swimming all over the place. I mean, they're fish. And, you know, they should approach it the same way with these alien craft flying in the skies. And, of course, some could be bugs and birds and lens flare and who knows what. But I'll tell you what, there's a very, very large majority of these things are or these alien crafts just checking us out, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Ken, let's move on to number four, UFO sightings with Ken Pfeiffer here of MUFON, worldufophotos.org, worldufophotosandnews.org. A lot of these overseas so far, but now we're back into the States in Louisiana, 2011. This is number four.
Yeah, this is a great shot here. I've seen this object quite a few times. As a matter of fact, I've seen the same object. I don't know if it's the same object, but a very, very similar object when I did my investigation in a UFO sighting down in Alloway Township in South Jersey. And this craft is almost identical to what was down there a few years back. And as a matter of fact, I have quite a few photos of this style of alien craft that was taken by a lot of these amateur astronomers, these guys who are taking photos of the planets and the moon and everything else. They are picking these things up in the upper atmosphere. And they're just some great shots. Now, this was March 19th, 2011. This was over Louisiana. And it says here, I am a photographer, and on
Ken,
March 19th, I was outside.
I hate to do this to you, Ken. We're going to have to hold that over to the next hour because we are at the end of our first hour. Into the Paranormal rolls on. Ken Pfeiffer is my guest tonight on this, the debut. Stick with me.
Abnormal. I see dead people walking around like regular people.
Paranormal. Somewhere between abnormal and paranormal.
I felt like something was near me, kind of a eerie feeling.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Jeremy Scott asks the questions that we're all dying to know.
You can't handle the truth!
Hello? Hello?
You can't keep him down, no matter how hard you try.
Hey, that's the guy!
Traveling into the witching hour from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, you're riding into the paranormal.
Yeah, not nearly as hot. That was just stupid hot. Now we have right around perfect hot up here in the Northwest. Actually got an overcast this weekend. Much cooler. No sticky. That was just sticky. Stupid. But back we are now with Ken Pfeiffer here in just a moment. And we're going to pick back up right where we left off with his monthly UFO sightings report. Of course, Ken's website's worldufophotos.org, worldufophotosandnews.org. And many of these pictures that he's taking that he's bringing us tonight, he's taking right from his website. So you'll find many of these accounts there. You can also go to at Parabnormal Show or Into the Parabnormal on Facebook. Either one will do, and you'll see the pictures there. We've put up sightings 1 through 4 already on Twitter. We'll make those into the chat room in just a moment, into the Parabnormal Live chat, which you can find on the front of the website. That's into the paranormal.wix.com/ITP radio. Back with Ken Pfeiffer, we go to a sighting number 4, which we were starting to get the story to right when we hit the top of the hour. I'm still trying to get my timing down, Ken, so my apologies. But back to Louisiana, March 19th, 2011.
That's a great photo. Like I said before, I've seen this photo, this type of craft, quite a few times. I investigated a craft and a sighting of this type of craft in South Jersey a few years ago. And part of what the story goes, March 19th, 2011, he says here that he's a photographer, and on March 19th I was outside taking pictures of the moon during its lunar perigee. My grandparents were also outside with me playing with my daughter on her swing set. While aiming my shot of the moon, I noticed what I thought was some debris on my lens, so I cleaned it and prepared to try the shot again. I observed at this point that I could make out the object only through the camera lens and that it was not obvious to the naked eye. So apparently, you know, this thing was pretty high up in the upper atmosphere because he couldn't see it with his eye. He could only see it through his lens of his camera. And at this point, I realized that I was not seeing a speck on my lens, but rather something in the sky. I tried to use my autofocus to capture the object, but it kept focusing on the moon. I turned off the autofocus and manually targeted the object, and this is the picture that is attached to this report. Let me see. I don't know if it's important, but my camera is a Canon Rebel T2i with a Sigma 18-250 millimeter lens. The photograph was taken zoomed all the way in. Once the image was captured, I reviewed it on my camera and called my grandparents over to see what I had photographed. None of us had ever seen an airplane like this before, and my grandparents and I both looked at up, but none of us could see the object. I set my camera to live mode, allowing us to see the viewfinder image on the screen on the back of the camera. Positioned it, and we all saw the object. I'm not sure if we couldn't see the object but with the naked eye because of its size in the sky or something else, but whatever the case, we could only see it through the camera. While I never actually saw the object moving, it was in slightly different positions to the moon every time I looked at it, and we talked about it for a couple of minutes, and I tried to get another picture of the object, but I couldn't find it this time, and we decided to come upload the images to the computer and look at them a little bit closer. But I've seen this object quite a few times, and there's a lot of astronomers out there who like to take photos of the moon and the planets, and sometimes they run across this craft. you know, on with their photos, on their photos, and it's a dynamite shot, it really is.
Ken, how many pictures do you have on your websites combined?
Well, combined, I probably have about, let me see, maybe 11,000. I have a, most of them are alien craft photos, UFO photos, but I have over 9,000, plus I have one of a very large strange gallery. I have a ghost gallery, believe it or not. I also have a lot of my discoveries that I made on the moon and Mars and Saturn. These are things that I find in my spare time. I like to go through the high-definition NASA photos of some of these images that's been captured of the different planets and the moon. And you'd be surprised. There's a lot of strange things, especially on the moon, that I've found. And my gallery is growing. I probably have about maybe close to 15 different galleries of different things, but it's basically all UFO related, and I want to try to keep it, that style of a website.
Ken Pfeiffer is my guest. His monthly UFO sightings report is featured on my website and at worldufophotos.org, worldufophotosandnews.org. We've got a couple of more of these, 5, 6, and 7, and then we want to talk about the Jackie Gleason case, and if we have some time, maybe some military sightings. So take us to Illinois for number 5 in 2010, Ken.
Okay, yeah, that's a super photo. This was October 30th, 2010. This was over Batavia, Illinois, and the statement goes here is, I saw three lights in the sky with my wife and grandson. Our photo was hasty and poor as the camera couldn't photograph the sky and the lights at a wide angle. The close-up was blurred. Our view was much closer and wider if there were a single object, and which is about 45 degrees. The right light was almost to the south, perhaps south, southeast, as seen in relation to the planet, I believe Jupiter in the photo. The leftmost light was more to the southeast, seemingly directly east of the right from my view. The apex of the isosceles triangle was made about a 45 degree or so in elevation in between the two, but higher inclination. We saw the lights through the leaf bare trees mostly, and these lights were never moved, either in relation to each other nor in relation to the tree branches we were looking through. They looked like planes in the sky, but never moved and without noise. It was too large across the sky for a blimp, and again, no propeller noise. Helicopters in wide formation didn't make sense either. So, and why would the lights fade out? So we looked for solid material between the lights and could see none. The stars were not bright enough to pass through the sky, which was a couple hours past sunset. The sky seemed clear, but must have been a bit hazy, as I don't recall stars that night, although Jupiter was bright. The lights faded out almost simultaneously after about 10 or 15 minutes. Given the time posted, my location on my patio was on the west bank of the Fox River in Batavia. So, that was a pretty... This is a part of a MUFON case file, so that's where I was able to get this one from.
Where do you get some of your other reports? I know you work with some of the other UFO investigative groups as well.
I would have to say the National UFO Reporting Center out of Washington State. I was getting a lot of reports from UFO Casebook, but from what I understand, Billy Booth kind of threw in the towel, and he's not going to be updating his website. UFO Casebook was probably had the most information about UFOs and some incredible photos on his website. But I think, from what I understand, I think he was going through some poor health, and he decided to give it up for a while. I guess I don't know, but. Now, there's a few of them out there. As a matter of fact, a lot of these organizations send these sightings to me, especially in the most recent sightings. And believe it or not, Phantoms and Monsters.com has a lot of UFO sightings on it, and I get a lot of information from them also.
Absolutely. We're going to skip over number six, Sao Paulo, Brazil. Folks can check out the picture if they want by going to the website. We'll also put that out on the up in the chat room and at Parabnormal Show on Twitter, Into the Parabnormal on Facebook for those who want to see the picture. That's number six. That's one that we featured before. We'll skip over Sao Paulo, Brazil, and go to number seven, Jersey City, New Jersey, August 2011.
Yeah, this was a very clear shot. As a matter of fact, them red lights you see, at first I thought maybe it had something to do with thrusters or something on the bottom of this craft, but after analyzing the photo, and it looks like that there are some kind of a lights under this. Now, this was basically over Jersey City, New Jersey, and in the Manhattan area. We get a lot of sightings in the Manhattan area, especially at night, because you know, the Manhattan is lit up like a diamond. If you're up in the sky flying around in your little flying saucer at 100,000 feet at nighttime, you know, Manhattan is just lit up like a diamond. So I'm sure these things are coming down here just to investigate. But basically, this one here was August 30th, 2011. Jersey City, New Jersey, says here, last night in New York, August 30th, around 10 p.m., I noticed from the apartment windows overlooking the Hudson, looking out across to Jersey City from lower Manhattan, a hovering, stationary, seemingly airborne object was over Jersey City. Now, this person was in Manhattan, you know, looking at this object that was over New Jersey, Jersey City, so... It had a bright red light flashing regularly underneath. I enjoy aviation and frequently look out of the apartment windows to see what's what. I knew this wasn't a plane from first glance. I looked at it long and hard because it had an odd bulk to its shape, and it seemed too big for a helicopter, and probably therefore was a blimp. My feeling was that it was unidentifiable by the naked eye, and it made me pretty inquisitive to know what it was. I watched it hardly moving, maybe progressing, but very slow. Logic told me it had to be a helicopter, so I got on with other stuff. But after 10 minutes, I saw it was still there and had not changed position much, and I decided to photograph it. And these pictures were taken with an 8-second exposure. I zoomed one using iPhoto. The object is not something I recognize. It is probably some sort of balloon or blimp, but it would be interesting to know what type and what it was doing. It continued slowly, progressing inland away from Jersey City for about an hour. The flashing red light, very prominent and visible. My friend's kids came in not long after I had photographed it, and I pointed out the object to them, and it must have been seen by thousands. I'm sure there's a sensible explanation, but I do not have one at this point.
Okay, we've got one more to get to. That is number it's the Jackie Gleason case. And that's a very, very fascinating case as well. Jackie Gleason claims that that he had contact with extraterrestrials.
Yes, he claimed he saw alien bodies, and I picked this up off of Rents. Rents' website. He has some pretty good UFO things on there, and I picked this up off of his site. But let me see. It was a chance conversation. Well, it says here that Gleason was an extremely serious armchair UFO researcher, and prided himself on his huge collection of UFO related books, which numbered into the thousands. I didn't know that. As soon as a new title came out, even in Europe or the UK, Jackie had a copy. Little did he suspect that his interest in that topic would one day gain him access to something that most people would never, ever believe, and I would leave others who shared his interest either skeptical or forever jealous. It was a chance conversation one afternoon back in 1974 in Florida while Jackie Gleason was playing golf with President Nixon. Apparently they were good friends and buddied around and played golf together. So, you know, one thing led to another, and Jackie had mentioned his interest in UFOs and his large collection of books, and the president admitted that he also shared Jackie's interest and had a sizable collection of UFO-oriented materials of his own. At this time, the president said little about what he actually knew, but things were to change drastically later on that same night. One can only imagine Gleason's surprise when President Nixon showed up at his house around midnight, completely alone and driving his own private car. When Jackie Gleason asked him why he was there, Nixon told him that he wanted to take him somewhere and show him something. He got into the president's car, and they ended up at the gates of Homestead Air Force Base, which is there in Florida. I guess it's about 30, 40 miles south of Miami, Homestead is. And they passed through security and drove to the far end of the base to a tightly guarded building. At this point, I will quote directly from Gleason himself from an interview he gave to UFO researcher and author Larry Warren. We drove to the very far end of the base in a segregated area, finally stopped near a well-guarded building. The security people saw us coming and just sort of moved back as we passed them and entered the structure. There was a number of labs we passed through first before we entered a section where Nixon pointed out what he said was the wreckage from a flying saucer enclosed in several large cases. Next, we went into an inner chamber, and there were six or eight of what looked like glass-topped Coke freezers. Inside them were the mangled remains of what I took to be children. Then upon closer examination, I saw that some of the other figures looked quite old. Most of them were terribly mangled, as if they had been in an accident. And Gleason, he was understandably excited by all this, but he was quite traumatized by it all and said that he couldn't eat or sleep properly for weeks afterwards and found himself drinking heavily until he was able to gain his composure. His wife at the time, Beverly, recalls him being out very late that night and speaking excitedly about what he had seen when he returned home. So, you can read forever about this sighting that Jackie Gleason had, and I've always been a big fan of Jackie Gleason, and he seemed to be the kind of guy that told it like it was, and this was a very, very interesting case of seeing these aliens in the morgue, basically what it was.
And for those who don't know, Jackie Gleason was an actor and a musician and a comedian.
He was, of course, the star of the Honeymooners. And he had his own show, the Jackie Gleason Show. Now, we're talking, 50s, early 60s, I guess. But, he was been in many movies, and he was a big star back then. As a matter of fact, he never flew, from what I understand. I know a little bit about him, and he always would never fly in a plane, but he always took trains wherever he went. He would always take a train. So that was very interesting to know that about him.
Ken, what's coming up for you at MUFON? You basically every day you'll get these reports, and in three states, you have a pretty active role there in Rhode Island and in Vermont and New Jersey. What's on your plate these days? I know you're retired, and you love doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah, this is what I do. I just enjoy getting up every morning and walking over to my computer, and I'm excited to see what's new. What new sightings that MUFON has, and there's so much information out there. It's almost impossible to keep up on everything. A lot of people ask me about this sighting and that sighting, and a lot of them I've never heard about. But that's just because there's so much of this information out there on the. It's really hard to believe. Now, I do have a conference coming up here. I'm going to plug our MUFON Philly UFO conference at the Sheraton Bucks County. That is October 28th and 29th. I'm going to be a speaker. I'm going to be showing my alien craft presentation for about an hour and 15 minutes. That would be on Friday night. So I'm going to be opening up the conference. And, of course, the conference runs into all day Saturday, and John Ventry and some other noted speakers will be there, but I'm already starting to prepare for that, And that should be a pretty good time coming up here at the end of October.
Ken, we look forward to having you back the second week in August. Ken Pfeiffer's website's worldufophotos.org, worldufophotosandnews.org, where you can find more than 11,000 pictures. Ken, thanks for jumping on into the paranormal, and best to you.
It's an honor being on, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Absolutely. There's Ken Pfeiffer. He's a MUFON investigator. These craft that are being reported by people in mass majority all across the world, as proved by the sightings we brought you tonight. This is not just a United States or a North American phenomenon. There are sightings that are reported all across the world. I don't go quite as far as Ken Pfeiffer does, saying that these have to be alien craft, unless, of course, the definition of alien just happens to be, well, something that is maybe foreign, or in that sense, you just use the term alien. But I don't think that necessarily all of these that are reported necessarily are driven by extraterrestrials or are alien craft. This is Into the Paranormal from the right to the left coast of the United States. We are approaching the witching hour. We're taking you to the witching hour on the East Coast on this Saturday night. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Saturday night, Into the Paranormal.
Oh, my God. Boy, does it feel better than ever to be back behind this microphone. It's like I never should have left. Hey, we'll get to that in a moment. You know, I want to make sure you get your money's worth here when you come to this program. It's free to listen live. It's free to listen not live. It's free to listen all the time. If you're nice and kind and you send me support, I might get my own domain soon. Who knows? I might start doing more shows. I want to thank our loyal affiliates, because without them carrying this program, our reach wouldn't nearly be as wide. Valentine Radio, 1610 in Marfa, Van Horn, Fort Davis, and Valentine, Texas. Good evening to you. Approaching the witching hour near the Cincinnati, Ohio area in the town of Hillsboro, St. Mary Catholic Church, the congregation and the surrounding population listens on 106.9 WLRU. And, of course, the TuneIn radio app is just the coolest thing since sliced bread. Download it. Search Into the Paranormal. You'll find me. Give it a follow. You'll find all of your great radio stations. except those that are owned by that certain corporation that has their own app for those. And you get all that on the TuneIn Radio app. Great partners. Of course, we're up on YouTube. Eventually, we'll be streaming live on YouTube. I might bring you into the studio. But that is way down the line. Of course, we're also on Spreaker, and we're on SoundCloud as well. For those who follow on those mediums, we try to reach you as much as we possibly can. You know, I'm used to doing 3 hours. I've been used to be doing 3 hours. I don't know if you can tell, the voice is getting a little bit adjusted to being back beyond the microphone. It's been 3.5 weeks, and it's just like riding a bike. It'll eventually happen, but you have to work on it. 2 hours just flies on by. So we're already into the final half hour of the program. Still time for you. The Skype is Into Parabnormal, INTOPARABNORMAL. Make sure you put the B between the A and the N, and you'll find us there. You know, we had Ken Pfeiffer on the line, but we have a little bit of a problem with the incoming calls, you know, things to be ironed out the very first week. Outgoing calls are not a problem, so I guess if you don't like the mind the world knowing your number, put it in the chat room or email intotheparabnormal@gmail.com, intotheparabnormal@gmail.com, and I might even call you back and have you on in this final half hour of the program if you'd like. Happening of late have been some mysterious encounters that people report in Muscatine County, Iowa. There are signs that individuals are standing beside roadways, sometimes stepping in to the line of travel, the line of sight, the you know, the thing you ride across, drive through. Did a lot of writing. Somebody did a lot of driving through nine states of these great United States to get me back to my home state of Oregon. But these individuals are stepping into the roadway. They are dressed in black trench coats. It's even been some reported walking down paved roads across people's yards, you know, getting close to their personal space. Not sure if this is a real legit Men in Black activity. The sheriff's office, though, is saying that maybe some pranksters are behind these sightings. Of course, we could be so not naive to that and say that these Men in Black who are harassing people in Muscatine County, Iowa, are just pranksters. Or we could not be naive and say that they're actual Men in Black. And for what ways or reasons they would be coming after these people, I guess, remains to be seen. But just keep your head up if you're there. Well, there's also a story of a mysterious hum being heard worldwide. You know, I have theories on what these sounds are that are echoing from the depths of the earth. And yes, I'm back in the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon back in the remote Pacific Northwest. And my theory has not changed one bit. That something is happening beneath us. The reason that SETI and METI and those other organizations, which we had the story earlier in the program, they haven't found any transmissions of an alien signal in about a year of trying. And of course, my theory on that all is that they're looking in all the wrong places. They have a set of telescopes that are looking at one frequency. Now, who's to say that, well, aliens and extraterrestrials communicate on that frequency, if at all? We know many from many of the encounter reports that the communication is done telepathically. So why would we would think there would be some sort of communication on a frequency and the exact frequency in which these individuals are looking. So it doesn't surprise me that there is absolutely no sign of a signal up there. But it could simply just be because we're looking in all the wrong places. Or as Dr. David Jacobs and others have made the case, hybrids, humanoids, hybrids are actually here on Earth, that they're among us living. And so the day in which aliens come to Earth is not going to be in any of the ways that we envision. But there is And there are a lot of strange sounds, humming noises, not just here in the United States, across the world. And this account, which you could read from livescience.com, talks about an encounter in British Columbia. Happened pretty late at night. And these things are happening all across the world. You know, without getting into too much detail on this report, since it's audio, and we don't actually have the audio of the humming noise, we have in past occurrences, trumpet noises. Sounds like underground drilling or boring or something to that effect. You would think if it was something like that, we would have an explanation as to what these noises actually are. But nope, still no explanation for this worldwide hum. And we bring you a story of what might be a chupacabra or might not be a chupacabra. By the way, on the second show of the month, we'll have much more paranormal news than we would usually have on a program. Ken Pfeiffer joins us the second week of every month. Sometimes we'll have a second guest. Sometimes we won't. And we'll bring you much more paranormal news than we usually would. But how could I avoid the story of a possible death by pitchfork? A man in Ukraine claims that he killed a chupacabra. You know, we know that in the case of John Edmonds at Alien Ranch, Stardust Ranch, he claims he has killed extraterrestrials with a samurai sword. Apparently, if you're going to kill a chupacabra, you use a pitchfork. Although it remains to be seen whether that's actually a chupacabra or if it's just a sick dog, as sick as that may be. I want to thank my affiliates for picking up the program. And coming up next week, it'll be an exclusive update on the Washington State Poltergeist House that only I can bring you with Keith Linder, Steve Mara, and Don Phillips. From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, where it feels good as ever to be back home, I'm Jeremy Scott, saying good evening and good morning.